Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Say Report. I'm your host, Devin Decker, and joining me, my host companion, Sejan Sarawick. Sejan?
Hey, everybody. It's Sejan. We're here on another beautiful Monday evening recording for you. Dev, you like shotgun blasted like a ton of ideas at me of how we were going to do this intro, so why don't you pick one and go?
Well, what I want to address is some big things, some big changes that happened at Decker Base 13 today. And ironically enough, no, coincidentally enough, first of all, we're going to deal with the Alanis Morris set and how she ruined an entire generation. We do this often here at the Say Report. If it's your first episode, welcome. I have to imagine you're here because you heard our little Nikki episode. But Alanis Morissette, she really kind of changed the definition of ironic to coincidental for an entire generation of people. So, coincidentally, the big stuff going on back at My Ponderosa, it relates a lot to new television. And
was she trying to be ironic by not being ironic the entire song? Is that like a joke we all need to come to terms with?
I mean, I think that you have a very strong argument there, right in the source material, because she goes, "And isn't it ironic? Don't you think?" And it's like, are you asking if I think that's irony? And then I'm the idiot for saying yes because you presented such a compelling argument to me, Ms. Morissette? There's a lot there to unpack. And one day, we will give Ironic by Alanis Morissette, and just Ironic by Alanis Morissette, its due diligence. I'm not saying 4-hour episode, but...
And thus the seed for a very special episode was planted.
maybe a time capsule. That might fit better into a time capsule episode. But yes, in October of 2020, the Deckers bought a new refrigerator.
On that day, man was saved.
Unfortunately, that refrigerator didn't arrive until today. Day that we are recording, which is April 12th in the year 2021. So that's like 6 months. That's some time has passed.
So is it one of them smart ones? Can you can you click on the screen so that it shows you what's inside?
No, it's a dumb refrigerator, and I'm glad that it's a dumb refrigerator. I mean, it's beautiful. It's all stainless steel, very modern looking. And it's going to be nice to have a refrigerator again, because it's not that the refrigerator we had was broken. Far from it. I actually have that refrigerator now in the basement, moving closer to becoming my final form of Dan Connor, nay, John Goodman. But, yeah, I mean, it still works. It's just that it's 25 years old, and I believe when you met that refrigerator, Sejan, the light in it no longer worked.
Oh, man.
And that was 15 years ago, at least.
It's light inside died a long time ago, yeah. Devin. That is true, yeah.
So, and it's nice, I've kind of had a weird phobia about going into the refrigerator. And not for, Dirk Gently, Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul, or Requiem for a Dream reasoning. Just the fact that without a light in there, I was afraid I'd get lost, or afraid of what I might stumble upon. Case in point, I found a bottle of moonshine that I bought in 2013. Cleaning out the refrigerator today, and I kicked off this episode with a shot from that moonshine. Still delicious.
I mean, it could only get better, right? That's the whole thing.
I mean, that's right. That's sort of, there might be a little dust on the bottle, but don't let it fool you about what's inside. It gets sweeter with time. Country music. I listened to a lot of country music today too while we were cleaning the refrigerator. It's just been a day. So we have this new refrigerator, and it took 6 months for it to happen, and now it's here. And the reason why this refrigerator is important, and relating to something we talked about a lot in last week's episode, Promising Young Woman, again, apologies for the lack of spoiler tag on that one. Not that anybody came at me like, how dare you not say spoilers in the episode proper, but an apology, should have done it. You have to love that when you finish recording, someone makes the comment, "So, Did you say spoilers? Because you kind of talked about that whole movie. And if anybody wanted to see it, I don't know if they can or should. Like, that was fun critique from people who overheard us recording. But we talked about fridging and the fact that Nina, Cassie's friend in Promising Young Woman, spoilers again, gets fridged in order to move along the story. And I'd really like to focus with the new refrigerator and the old refrigerator on fridging and how it's a huge fucking deal still. I mean, we don't generally have themes for these episodes, and I promise we're going to talk about more, but I'd like to explore the idea of fridging, where the term comes from, and then I will explain why it's relevant to the discussion that I wanted to have this episode. So,
Man. What you got? Because I have a weird, knowledgeable history of this particular trope.
I know, and I'd really like I know that. So if possible, I'd like to tap into that vein of Sijin's black gold here, to explain to the people a little bit of the fridging trope.
Well, I think what's really interesting about the concept of fridging is it's actually only something that has. So, fridging is a term that explains that a character, most often a female character, or although nowadays you could apply it to any person of otherness, being killed in a horrific fashion in a way to motivate the hero of your story. Like they were not going to change unless this particular thing happened. So it comes from the Green Lantern. Like, let's just throw the tiger on the table here. The term fridging specifically comes from, oh man, which one of the Green Lanterns is it? It's not Hal, is it?
I think it's Hal Jordan. It,
It might
that's
be
what
Hal.
jumped to my mind,
But
so.
yeah, so it kind of history of the Green Lantern characters, all of them have a period in their story in which they slack off a bit. And for Hal Jordan, it goes completely haywire. He goes like straight off the deep end evil. But for all of them, there's always this kind of this turn of which like all evil rings, like, oh, I could just keep it for myself, why don't I? But like they like
All
this
magic
idea of,
rings, really. Not they don't necessarily need to be evil.
that's true. All magic rings, the evil or not, they might not actually be evil. They're just are, and it's how men use them. That's a whole other conversation. But anyway, so at some point, in order to motivate Hal to get off his ass, the writers decided that what they were going to do is they were going to just kill his girlfriend, just completely, just and the reason it's the term is fridging is because he discovers her dead body has been stuffed into a refrigerator, and it is the thing that motivates him to stop being a dick or get off his ass and get moving, right? And it's a really upsetting like technique. Like it's really lazy script writing to just basically just be like, oh, I know, I'm going to take this person's love interest or this person's child or this person's parent and just eliminate them. And I mean, like, it's not new to stories. Like, I mean, like there's so many stories that we can point to where like the motivating factor is the loss of a loved one and things like that. It's just that it is unfortunately an overused and upsetting trope in empowerment stories, and it becomes a real problem. So just to kind of give you guys a prime example of why this is such a problematic trope is, spoiler alert, talking about, we've already said it, but talking about something like Promising Young Woman, wherein it is supposed to be a film that specifically explores the empowerment of a female character. But again, the only way that they can achieve it is by falling back on this horrific trope of we need to watch another female suffer horrifically in order to do it. And it's the idea that we have talked about this many times, Devin and I, of we hope to one day be at a point where we can tell a story in which a character is black, a character is a woman, a character is gay, without that having to be like the defining factor of the story or character, right? And I have firmly fallen on the stance of just like, we got to get the stories out there first. It is important. The reason that these stories still exist and are still happening is because there's not an audience that would just accept certain things right now without it first being like put, in front of them. And I think that what we're seeing with fridging is it is a trope that lands right on the kind of the the turning point or the wall or the line in the sand of like us crossing past that to get past the fact that like every black story has to be about a kid like making his way up from the ghetto. No, like why can't we just tell a story about a successful black family and just one of their kids happens to be going to college and it's a whole other story. Like it doesn't have to be a surprise that this kid has made it this far, right? Like it's that same idea of like why can't we just tell a story about female empowerment where a woman feels the need to be this powerful, strong figure, but she doesn't have to lose a female figure in her past in order for that to be something that's important to her. Because there's plenty of women out there that are not in that position. They didn't lose mothers, they didn't lose friends, they didn't lose daughters in some fashion that made them realize they needed to focus on their womanhood in order to it's a again, it's just lazy script writing that unfortunately I think kind of still holds on to that belief that we still kind of need that. And in a lot of ways, it was dead and over when it first kind of got brought up because the other big thing about this, I guess I should have said, because this also happened like 50 years ago in the Green Lantern comics. Like when I was like writing about it and reading about it in the 2000s and the 2010s, and it had already been decades since this event had happened. But here we are now, and it's still being used. And so like it's a weird, complicated concept in that it is so simple that people kind of just have all sorts of opinions and thoughts on it. But I don't know about Dev, but I am firmly of the belief that it is an overused, unnecessary, easy trope for writers to fall back on when they don't know what else to do.
And let's join it, bum bum, where we left our story off, because Elliot Stabler, on April 1st of all dates, returned to Law and Order SVU. Now we talked briefly about the fact that Law and Order SVU is now the de facto Law and Order, that it's the one that everybody thinks of, and Detective Elliot Stabler, Christopher Maloney. He's been gone from the show for 12 years. He did 12 seasons as Elliot Stabler and then walked away from the series, and now we're 12 years later, and he came back for an episode of Special Victims Unit. And that sort of acted as a, I don't want to say it was the backdoor pilot, but
I
it
was going to ask
was.
if it was kind of the reintroduction of his character four, though.
Yeah. It was the reintroduction of his character for Law and Order Organized Crime, which the theme song for that show was so far from removed from ba-ba-ba-da-ba. Like, they've put in all sorts of remixing and jazzing up and like electronica to make it a different song, but still at its core, ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da. And right in the beginning of the episode, a car bomb goes off, and oh my God, there's New York City, there's New York police plates in the front window. There's a placard, and then Elias Stabler's sitting there, and he's like, "My wife was in the car," and I paused the show that I was watching and said, "If they killed Elliot Stabler's wife, I'm out." Like, they can't have done that. That can't be the way that Law and Order, a show that has entered its 22nd season of Special Victims Unit, after having 21 seasons of the original Law and Order series, not to mention Criminal Intent somehow mixed up in there at the time, and that was like 8 seasons of that show, right? It can't have been so much created content that the only way you could see bringing Elliot Stabler back for a new show is to kill his wife.
I mean, like I said, lazy, straightforward, tropey fucking screenwriting. It's boring. I mean, at this point, like there's so many other sins to levy against it that have to do with empowerment and portrayals of otherness on TV. But like, I cannot get past the fact that like there's not even a cold-hearted logistical reason to use it as a trope anymore and to use it as a story point anymore. Like there's literally no excuse for it, which makes it to me a million times worse.
Yeah, I mean, because tropes, as much as we like to point at tropes and laugh at them and say, I can't believe that they just did this or that, and that's happened before, tropes are a part of storytelling, right? it's part of the way that you connect to the audience is by doing things that are familiar, and that's basically what a trope is. We introduce something that you kind of already understand as a way to, you know, ingratiate and bring you closer to this new story.
Yeah, I mean, it's language. It's film language 101. Like, it's making sure that everybody's on the same page. Like, we all understand what's now happening and what's going to happen, or at least we have a semblance of that idea so that maybe they can play with that later. So, like, tropes are a fantastic tool, and much like a green ring, like, it is all about how you use it. It is not good nor bad. It is just the implementation of it that's going to define it, right? The context of the trope matters, because, like, you look at anything, to fall back on an old trope of mine, you look at anything Edgar Wright does, and the whole idea is like, well, yeah, I love, like, movie tropes. Like, let's do this buddy cop comedy, and then, you know, but, like, we're going to twist it, and we're going to play with it, and we're going to have fun with it, and you know what you're getting into because of this trope, but also, I'm going to have fun with this trope in a way that you don't expect, and that's what makes a good Edgar Wright film or product, right? Because, I mean, even Spaced did this, right? Like, so there is a good way to use tropes, but...
Of all the tropes,
yeah,
the dead loved one, primarily female, is the one that I am the most tired of.
Yeah.
And this, and also, like, there were so many, like, oh, she's rushed to the ICU. Okay, she's okay. She's going to be okay. And then she's talking to Elliot. And then, oh, my God, she had she went into cardiac arrest and they don't know why. And it's like, oh, but we were able to pull her out of it. So then, like, another conversation. And then... while he's away, she dies, and I didn't even get to say goodbye. And I'm like, I can't believe you guys, like, milked this thing for a whole episode, and also, like, gave it a stay of execution twice?
Yeah, what's weird is, like, very often this trope is at its most problematic when, like, they make no effort to put any depth to the character that gets killed, because they really literally are just a MacGuffin, an object in the plot to move things along, right? And that was kind of one of the big things that was levied against Green Lantern losing his girlfriend, is that, like, she was barely a character on page as it was, and then suddenly she just gets killed in this horrific fashion for it's over the top. The character is thin. There's other reasons why this person should be motivated besides the death of a loved one. Like, all of this stuff is what leads to it being super shitty, because I'm not even saying that the death of a loved one as a motivating factor for a character can't even be a bad one. And to me, though, there are times when that happens and it is not fridging. Fridging does not stand as an umbrella term for any time a loved one gets killed and it forces somebody into action, right? It's just when they go out of their way to tell you, first of all, you should love this character for no reason, and then on top of that, they axe them almost immediately, and then on top of that, there's this feeling like, if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't have done that, and there's a lot of other layers to the idea or the concept of quote-unquote fridging, and for the record, I think that what you're talking about in this episode qualifies immensely. It covers all of those bases.
It covers all the bases of fridging?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Because I felt like you were saying I was off. And if I were off, that's fine. Like, that's one of the reasons why this discussion with you is...
It fits into exactly what we would consider to be fridging, as opposed to it being an interesting, like story plot point where... So, for instance, let's take another instance where a character has to die to motivate a loved one. The first thing that comes to mind is Black Panther, right? And Killmonger's father passing away and is kind of like the thing that kind of sets off his whole journey, right? And... in that, it is explored and there is depth to it's Sterling... It's Sterling K. Brown that plays his dad. Yeah, right. So there's depth to his character. He's in more than one scene where we learn that there's like more going on behind him. We want to know more. Also, like, there is a kind of really important concept in the story writ large that is at play in those moments, and that is the idea of, like, family and blood and, like, fatherhood and son and stuff like that. There's all of this other stuff that contextually layered on top of that character being killed that makes it not frigid. Whereas, and somebody could argue that's the other thing, is you could argue with me that is, and I'd love to hear it. I'm not gonna say that you're wrong if you think it is. It's just that to me, that does not qualify, right? Whereas something like in this, where you have a female character that you barely know, we understand we're supposed to care about her though, because the guy we love, it's his wife. So therefore, boom, we're supposed to care about her instantly just because of that connection and nothing else. I'm sure that like she's not a criminal, right? Like we don't find out that there's some deeper reason why she was the one that was killed. It is legitimately she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, right?
It was the fact that it was his car that was
His car.
targeted, and then she said, "I'm gonna go get the car, honey." So because she went and started the car, she's the one who got blown up by the car bomb, where it was meant for
No
him.
depth. Yeah, there's no depth to this whatsoever, right? Like, so there's a lot of stuff to this, and basically an easy rule of thumb for me is if everything surrounding it is as thin of a sheet of paper, then it's just poor writing and it's fridging. If there is actual like conversation and depth and context to be had from a character's depth, the death, then we can talk about that a little bit more. And it is probably not fridging in those cases. But this is like fridging 101. There is nothing about this character you need to know more than this other character loved her. And the fact that you need to qualify her character by this male character on screen is pretty fucking upsetting.
Right. Now, I want to go out there and I do want to say Elliot was married the whole 10 years that he was on SVU, or the whole 12 years that he was a character on SVU. So it's not like he left and got a wife in the interim and then did it. And there may have been some deeper understanding with that character that I am unaware of. But everything that they tried to do with it, as someone who hasn't watched Special Victims Unit, I'm gonna say ever. I definitely watched a couple of crossover episodes, like when Munch showed up from Homicide as a character. I tried because Munch was just such a great character. But even then, I couldn't tell you a full episode of SVU. They also were very similar to me in a way that Law and Order wasn't. I mean,
Oh,
structurally, every episode of Law and Order was very similar, but the
yeah, I see what you're saying.
cases, like, there are cases that I remember from Law and Order that have stuck with me.
Well,
Special
that's, yeah.
Victims Unit, not so much.
That, I mean, that's kind of the whole point of Law and Order, right? Is literally the rip from the headlines concept. But
Right.
like every case being drastically different and how cops handle themselves, how and lawyers handle themselves in those situations. That was the whole bread and butter of that show. By the time they got the Special Victims Unit, they realized they could make the same episode over and over.
Right. And then they've been doing it for the last 22 years. So all the more power to you, Richard Wolf.
Criminal intent all the way. I'm just gonna get that out there.
Criminal Intent
That
was one
was
that I
that
really did
yeah,
enjoy.
that was my bag. Like I'm not knocking either of them. I know plenty of people that are fans of all the whole universe, quote unquote, but Criminal Intent is the only Law and Order show that I legitimately would watch like seasons of to get like the overarching story. But anyway.
I really like the Anthony Anderson season of Law and Order. If you get the chance to watch just that, it is some of the crazy stuff. Anthony Anderson's time on that series is super enjoyable, Law and Order, and it's like 16 seasons in. But what I do like about Criminal Intent and why I will co-sign on that being the best one is this weird thing about Law and Order by that time was that we were all watching it on A&E in rerun format, and they did not run it in any sort of order. It's not like they put on the episodes in proper air order or anything like that. It almost felt like the one that aired at 10 o'clock is going to be a season 2 episode. The one that airs at 11 is going to be a season 5 episode. The one that airs at noon is going to be a season 4. And then the one at 1 is going to be a season like 7. So it would vary the detectives and the district attorneys that you were dealing with in every episode. And Criminal Intent really kind of ran with that. And the fact that it wasn't the same team every episode of Criminal Intent is what really made that show shine for me. And them bringing back original detectives from Law and Order. It was a lot of fan service and understanding of why the brand got to be so big in the hearts and minds of America.
Yeah, Vincent D'Onofrio being fucking weird on TV for an hour every day was definitely my jam too, so.
Obviously Vincent D'Onofrio is why what brings you in. But then like when Chris Noth came back and he would have episodes, like that was really cool. Plus, I think Eric Bogosian was on that one, right? Like, I think he ended up transitioning from Law and Order Proper to Criminal Intent, or I might just
Man,
be thinking of his time on Law and Order Proper. It's a crazy series.
I forgot that Law and Order. Okay, so officially, Ice T going from cop killer to cop player is not the weirdest thing that ever happened on Law and Order. Now that I remember that Eric Bogosian played a character for a
Yeah,
season.
for like a good amount of time. But I mean, the reason why we're talking about that is that like it was one of those situations where Elliot Stabler coming back, Christopher Maloney, the sexiest man alive, like by all accounts, one of the most fun people in the world.
Like chill to work with and like super funny and yeah.
Like that's the reason why I wanted to watch organized crime. I wasn't interested in a show about organized crime. I was interested in seeing that character come back. And that's not even a character that I have deep ties to, because as I've said, I've not watched SVU.
He's kind of the Jack Reacher of that universe. Like the dude can kind of do no, like he could do everything and do no wrong.
And that's the other thing, right? Aside from the fact that like the main draw to get him away from Rome and come back to New York to hunt down his wife's killer, which is the driving force behind the entire organized crime series, is that he wants to get revenge for the death of his wife. Like outside of that issue is we live in a very different world than we did 12 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago when Elliot Stabler walked away from SVU. So everybody is talking about how this guy's a loose cannon. He had six shootings while he was working on the force. And it's like, yeah, but he was cleared of all those shootings. Yeah, but he's the time that he came up in and the type of cop that he is, he's bad for policing today. And it's like, that'd be an interesting thing if we got to see it. If it wasn't just people having that discussion around him in these two episodes, and then it really not going any deeper than that. Like
Well, and
him.
what's really weird about that is like, I mean, he's kind of the golden boy. Like you and I could say as much as we want that SVU is not our thing, but like we can't deny that like we said before, it has become the gold standard of Law and Order, right? And like in that, like he's the guy. And like it's really weird. It's like when people try to talk about what a shitty Captain Kirk is in sometimes, and I'm in Star Trek, and it's just like we know, but like as an audience, we don't believe that for a second.
I mean, yeah, he did exactly. He boldly went where no person had gone before. Now,
Well, and
whether
like,
that
but he
discussion was having sex
was.
with green women.
No, but I mean, like shit, like oh, he broke the Kobayashi Maru. He's not a real pilot. And it's just like no, that makes him a good pilot, and nobody here is fooled into thinking otherwise.
Being the only person in Starfleet history to solve the thing of the Kobayashi
Kobayashi
Maru,
Maru.
sorry,
Yeah,
I
there
knew
you
it. Like being the only person to see that, like it's an unwinnable scenario, and then being like, yeah, I'm just gonna change it so that it can be won. Like that is outside the box thinking that honestly, black and white in an academic setting, he'd probably be bounced out of Starfleet and not allowed to become a captain.
But to bring this back to Lord Order, like to tell me that Stabler is not a good cop, we have 12 seasons of Law and Order to look at everything that you're calling him out for and to see the context for all of it. Like we literally have the tape, we have the video footage. It's the one thing with cops. Like it's so weird to try and use this weird 2021 mentality on him as a police officer, because one of the biggest issues we have nowadays is that nobody's monitoring them, but we literally have seasons of a show in which he is monitored.
Right. I mean, the thing that just kind of struck me was everybody being like, he had six shootings while he was a police officer with the NYPD. And I'm like, that sounds like a big number in the real world. But in TV cop like dealings, six shootings, this guy should win every fucking award. Like, the people on NCIS shooting people every week.
I mean, just to give a shout out to something else that we've talked about in the past that is pretty amazing is Bosch and the ways in which it opens up with him doing a shooting and like the whole background story is questioning whether or not it's justified, and like they lean into the idea that a shooting as a cop is not how things should usually be done, right? And like that's what we like to think as humans. I don't, you know, I can't speak to this as I have no actual experience of the force, but I like to think that the police officers I see rolling around here in Bountiful, Utah have probably not shot a guy, right? Like that should be the norm. The like calling him out for six shootings as a police officer should be a norm, but it's just so weird to do this with a character that we can go back and see all of that, and at that time he is portrayed as the hero.
Right, and not just that. I mean, like, even other Richard Wolf shows, Dick Wolf, it's fun to call him Richard, try it sometimes. Chicago PD, those guys are dirty cops. Like, maybe not like on the take dirty, but we're gonna take them out to the silos and get the information that we need. We're gonna take them out to the silos. That, as a listener and as a Seijin, you should have just gotten shivers down your spine, not even knowing what those words mean.
I mean, it's the Chicago PD. I have a sense of what
Well, right, but I'm really saying it's like all context clues and tone of. We're gonna take him out to the silos. Oh, okay. You guys.
And he didn't even, it's not even like his character left because like he was told to leave because of a bad shoot. Like it would add more to this if that was even the reason he wasn't a cop anymore. It's like, this is such a weird,
What? I
it's
mean,
such a weird like
apparently, again,
backstory to lay on him.
well, apparently, the reason why he left was because of his sixth shooting, and he left before it was resolved. But that was all stuff that was told to me in the episode, so I don't know if that's true or not. Like, it could just be histrionics rewriting it to bring in this character and maybe give some truth to this.
Does it feel like this was a show written not in the Law and Order universe? Or, I won't even go that far. Not written for this particular character in the Law and Order universe, and they realized they could use it for one?
I mean, I don't know. I've only watched the SVU leading into it, which was boring. It was a boring episode because, like, the whole time I'm just waiting for the shoe to drop on his wife actually being dead. And so that's just boring television. And then the second one, the organized crime one, like, it's him running around while, like, they're like, you can't work on this because you're too close to it. And then in the end, they're like, we're going to bring you on to the Organized Crime Task Force. And it's like, oh, okay. And weirdly, and this is weird to me, the main characters of Organized Crime are Christopher Meloni and Dylan McDermott, who by all accounts from the first episode is the head of the organized crime family. So it's not so much law and order as it is police and criminal, it's cops and robbers. I don't know why I didn't go with cops and robbers.
Yeah,
But
no,
like it
yeah,
looks
I don't
like
know either. We
that's
missed
gonna
opportunity,
be yeah,
but it looks like they missed one too.
it looks like that's what
Hey,
the show is going to be.
the more and more that you talk about it, the more and more I feel like this was not a Law and Order show. This was not a show meant for this character. It was just something that they have layered this context onto in order to give it some life. Does Mariska Hargitay show up at all?
Mariska Hargitay showed up in the SVU episode, and she's like, "You never said goodbye to me." And then there was some like heavy, like it's almost enough for me to want to comb through all of the SVU that I've missed, right? If I had nothing to do, like literally, I'd need to be nothing to do, Devin Decker. I'd need to assume a variant of Devin Decker that has not existed since summer of 2009. When I got laid off from the travel agency and literally just like had nothing to do. And I
Well,
got.
let me know when you get to season 22, episode 10, titled "Welcome to the Pedo Motel."
That's the most recent one, right?
No, there's one more. Our words will not be heard, which is the one that you know as the one that introduces organized crime.
Oh, really? I thought it was episode 9 that introduced organized crime. The one that aired
Oh
on
no,
April
maybe you're
1st.
right.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
Yeah,
sorry. I'm
the
looking at
one
a
that you're
tweet.
talking about is the one
Congratulate.
that's going to air this week.
Yes, I'm
11's
seeing
going
a tweet congratulating the two of them, and I thought that they were connected. They're not. It's just a yeah.
Yeah.
This is what the problem with on the fly research people.
Yeah, that's.
But yeah, man, I feel like I might watch Organized Crime as somebody that is not invested in SVU and possibly maybe even enjoy it because I'm not invested in Law and Order.
Well, it's on Hulu, not just on Peacock. I'd be very interested. I'm fine pulling the plug on this because I have other things that I want to discuss. If you want to watch the first episode of Organized Crime and we can reconvene next week on the Say Report to discuss it, I would be all about that. Heck, I'll even watch the second episode, Seijin.
Okay, let me
Like,
think about it and I will text you. I am not making here's a first. I'm not making a promise here on the show because if I check it out in 5 minutes in, I want out. I am getting out. I'm not going to force myself to watch the
all
show.
right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to pull the plug on organized crime right now. The promise
All of it.
is
We're solving it all, people.
the Law and Order organized crime created by Richard Wolf, plug pulled. And the promise from the Say Report is Seijin's going to check out 5 minutes of the show. And we're going to discuss maybe that 5 minutes or maybe the whole first episode, depending on how much it works for him, just
Sweet.
in a vacuum. So that's something. That's how you build content. Plus, we can get off of the Law and Order train. And I'd really like to get off of the Law and Order train.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that Richard Meltzer has to be like the conductor on the Law and Order train, and I don't trust that guy in his old age.
Oh, I love Richard Blitzer. Munch! He showed up as Munch on Mad About You. But that's another
Not Wolf
discussion for
Blitzer.
another.
He's Richard Meltzer. What are you doing?
What? I said Belt. You said that.
You said Blitzer.
I did say Blitzer? I might have. I like Blitzers. They're my favorite football players. Speaking of Blitzers, did you know that a movie released on Netflix over the weekend, Seijin?
I mean, I'm not surprised. What is that? What kind of lead-in is that?
Well, this movie features empowered women, and it's called
Oh,
Thunder
Thunder
Force.
Force!
Glenn Fry's song, Smuggler
Oh man,
Blues.
I tried Thunder Force, and I'm gonna be completely and totally honest here. It is not the movie's fault, but I needed to stop watching Thunder Force. I hit about 20 minutes into it and realized I was not giving it any of my attention because I might or might not have gotten sunsick this weekend by working outside without any sunscreen on.
I may have gotten sunsick this weekend. Ladies and gentlemen, that's my front runner for Seijin Zerowick quote of the year.
Yeah, I got a purple head going on right now, and it's because I was outside without a hat or sunscreen on. Don't do what Seijin does. Do what Seijin say.
All right. Well, with some not on the fly research, Thunder Force, as of the last time I looked at the IMDb page, which was Sunday morning, currently at a 3.2 user rating out of 10
Nice.
stars, and
Nice.
the five featured reviews gave it 2, 1, 2, 3, 2 stars.
So far, it sounds like it's going to be right up my alley when I finally get around to actually watching it. But go ahead, keep going.
I Seijin, as your friend and host companion on the Say Report and possible kidney donor, knock on wood, don't waste your time with Thunder Force.
Cool. Won't go back to Thunder Forest. Got it.
Like if those 20 minutes, if in those 20 minutes none of it caught your attention, I mean sun sickness, right? Kryptonian's disease,
The Kryptonian disease. Yeah, let's go with that.
is not the reason why. Because the opening of that movie is the strongest part of that movie. But weirdly, the same critique I had of Endgame before I rewatched it, having watched every other movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, don't bother world building and then just ignoring the world that you've built. Because that's what Thunder Force does.
That is a total fucking shame. I'll
Because.
tell you this, the one thing that I'm fighting for everybody is everybody wants to know what the fuck she ate instead of raw chicken.
That's well, that's a good question. It looks like sashimi. It looks like some sort of fish. I thought it was fish when it came out, and then I was actually kind of bothered when they're like, it's raw chicken, because, like, you want something that's just full of protein. Fish will do that too. But
And it's not gross.
yeah, like, and it looked like fish, and I'm like, oh, you
With the
know,
joke, Devin, with the joke, you have to be the funny.
have to be funny. No, and it's not funny. It's not funny anytime. But yeah, like, it's a movie where, like, and here's the thing: the Ben Falcone directed, Melissa McCarthy anchored comedy is usually something that I show up on release day, like, popcorn in hand, ready to just enjoy. I'm someone who liked Spy, despite people being like, Spy was awful.
Oh no, Spy's awesome. No, no,
Yeah.
no, no, no. Spy is a phenomenal like Bond spoof
Yeah.
female empowerment
The
film. Yeah, no,
Boss, I thought had a, was a really strong story. And then even Life of the Party, the one where she goes back to school in a Rodney Dangerfield, Billy Madison-esque adventure. That one has some really strong stuff. Like, I've watched that one on TBS. And that's saying something because that means that I watched it with commercials and heavy editing. Like, those all work for me. So obviously, release day, like, I'm hoping it's Dale's turn to pick the movie. Fingers are crossed that she's gonna pick Thunder Force. But I know that if she doesn't, a week from now, my father's going to pick Thunder Force. We're gonna watch Thunder Force. It's gonna happen based on what this family enjoys. So then we sit down, and it's that beautiful comic book style opening, explaining how superpowers came to this world and the rules of superpowers in this world. And I'm all about it. And then, like, let's just forget all of that. Let's just forget all of that.
That's
And,
such a disappointment.
like, and then to the point where they introduce something that, like, if this were happening, I don't know. The big thing of it, right? You've seen this at least 20 minutes of it. Slight spoilers, even though it's the literal opening of Thunder Force, is cosmic radiation bathed the world, and people were giving superpowers, but the superpowers were only given to people with the genetic predisposition to sociopathy, which, like, that's fine. That's like a fine, stupid thing to say in a movie. Like, I'm okay with those being the rules as long as those are the rules that you follow. But, like, just because you're genetically predisposed to be a sociopath, that doesn't mean you're going to automatically become a villain. There are plenty of superheroes who are sociopaths.
Yeah, it feels like it's very much a an attempt. It's a misunderstanding of sociopathy. Like
Yes.
that's what it is. It is the pop culture definition of it, where if you're a sociopath, then suddenly you're just this like cold, like lifeless behind the eyes type person that it's the thing we used to do with quote unquote psychopaths like 20 years ago, and then everybody was like, well, technically they're not showing signs of psychopathy, but sociopathy. And then so it's like, okay, fine, we'll use that term instead. Like, nope, you're doing the same thing again. You're just blanket using a term on all of these types of people without actually like exploring like the nuance or context of it. Like, maybe we shouldn't use mental illness as a gauge for whether or not a person is a villain or not. How about
That'd be lovely, right? Like,
Right.
honestly, this whole th the whole world, we should really have a franker discussion about mental health and stigmatize it less, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to be what we solve this year in human history, but it's something that we should definitely put on the docket for, like, the next 10 years, is to have a deeper understanding of mental health and not stigmatize it so much, so that maybe we can come to, like, real outcome and change in the world. But yeah, so they make it the sociopaths are the ones who do it. So of course everyone who has superpowers is evil. But then they introduce a character, like, halfway through the movie. Have you gotten to Jason Bateman yet? That's what I'm gonna ask
I
you.
mean, Jason Bateman is like the meme of the movie. So like
Yeah.
we all know that Jason Bateman is this like weird crab man in the movie, right?
Right. But Jason Bateman, he's not a miscreant. He's not one of these people who got his powers from the radiation that came from space. He's what he calls himself a half-creant because half Korean jokes have to happen in this movie three, four times. every time he calls himself a half Korean, which is a little hard to say, I'm not gonna lie.
Sorry, it's like I know that I'm not laughing because it's a funny joke. I'm just laughing because it exists in the world.
Yep, and the other thing about Thunder Force is that if there's a joke, we don't have to tell it one time. We tell it enough times so that all funny has been wrung out of the joke. So the half Korean joke, like, is dead on the vine at the end of the movie, and that's very sad.
The Family Guy style.
It's not actually sad. Like, it's good. That's the type of joke we should leave, like, dead on the vine. But, like, it's sad that you watch this movie and that's what it is. So, spoilers for Thunder Force, because I'm going to share it. The reason why he doesn't consider himself a miscreant is that he got his powers when, during his honeymoon, he went naked snorkeling with his wife. And he didn't know that it was over a radioactive coral reef, and he was bit on the genitals by a radioactive crab.
So he's literally got radioactive crabs. He's got a radioactive STD, and that is his power.
That is
his mutation.
And that's
story.
Why his arms are crab arms.
I mean, look, in good hands, that would be a real funny X-Men like spoof.
I mean, it's a great Spider-Man spoof, really. Because, you know, radioactive thing doing it. But, like, that means that in this universe where only the X-Men exist, right? Only mutants exist. We don't have any other superheroes based on what we're told in the beginning. We only have the people who were triggered due to the cosmic radiation from space to gain superpowers. That's it. Those are the only ones that we're told about. That radiation is able to give people superpowers, and yet the first thing happens in 1983. It takes until 2020 for someone to develop a superhero to fight against the miscreants.
Hey man, times are hard.
Times are not hard, CJ.
Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Somebody had to invent those, dude.
Cheetos or cheetahs? Are you saying that cheetahs were created in a lab?
No, Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Oh, Flaming Hot Cheetos. We just did the half Korean joke, really. We did it with Cheetos and cheetahs. But, see, no one is safe from mishearing words.
Shit.
That's why it's a relatable trope.
Yeah, that's why it's funny.
But yeah, like, it really, I was already kind of, like, thinly connected to the movie because, like, the only miscreants that Thunder Force were fighting were the crab and the laser person. Like, shouldn't there be more of these things? Shouldn't there be more people who are sociopaths with superpowers if Octavia Spencer's character has devoted her life to, like, creating a superhero to combat them? Wouldn't you think it'd be
like 30 years? There would be, like, an evil overlord already or something.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Like, it would. Yeah, time has passed, so it's strange. It's strange the way that it's handled, and it's almost been 40 years, and, like, no one has taken it. Like, Barbie Cannavale, spoilers, he's a miscreant, the guy who's running for mayor in Chicago.
Surprise, surprise, yes.
Like, he's the first one who ever had this plan to, like, do this.
Like, I mean, maybe it's because they're sociopaths, so they care about nothing. Not even themselves. I don't know, man. It all sounds very surface level, like, thought out in a lot of ways.
And that's not what I expect from the Ben Falcone directed, Melissa McCarthy anchored film. Like, it's a surface level thing, but then where you really get the joy is the fact that it goes deeper than it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
And this one just doesn't do that. And maybe if this had come out before superhero films were, like, the huge money-making engine that they are in entertainment, it could have done better. Like, if this had come out in the 2000s, where, like, superhero movies were, like, kind of new, right? We hadn't had Iron Man yet.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
If it had come out in the Mystery Men era.
I think that it would have worked, but like now people understand superheroes and how those stories work, and I think that's why, like, of all the Ben Falcone directed films, this one is falling so hard on its face.
Yeah, it almost feels like what it either needed to do was come out 20 years ago or come out 20 years from now, right?
Yeah, it's hitting at the wrong time. And this is the first film that during the watching, I'm like, COVID needs to friggin' end. Because these films that are like just going straight out to us so that we can have things to consume while we're in quarantine, the like quality control, it's gone. It's been
Well,
all but obliterated.
what it is what you're talking about is we have exposed the fact that things like Netflix is extremely guilty of this, but I want to make sure that I make it very clear. They are not the first people to use this method, and they will not be the last. They've made it the COVID has made it very clear that these types of industries, entertainment, music, film, television, they don't care about quality. They care about audience numbers. And the thing is they have figured out that sometimes poor quality art equals large audience numbers. Because one of the things I will tell you about Thunder Force is I've been hearing about it everywhere. So even if it's only being watched for 20, 30 minutes, even if people are only watching it to hate watch it, it's getting watched. We'll never know official numbers on any of this nonsense, despite my discovery that stuff is all being monitored. And if it is not being universally loved and praised, they have no reason to release the watch numbers on it. But I guarantee you it's being watched because I haven't heard anybody shut up about it for 3 days for four. You know what I mean?
Hell, we're talking
Like,
about it here, right? Like, it's not something, it's something that was so bad in my eyes that I felt the need to discuss it.
And to a place like Netflix, they don't care if you're not liking it while you're watching it.
They just care that we're talking about it. But like, my the reason why I say that, the reason why is there is an extended fantasy dance sequence in this movie that comes from nowhere,
Oh my God, Devin, you were
goes
describing
nowhere.
such a good movie to me. I
I
cannot wait to
want,
watch this
I can't,
movie.
good. I'm glad. And maybe it's going to be Siege's favorite movie ever. And I'd really want that for you. I want this film to find, I want you to find your little Nikki. It's what I want you to do.
That's
Because.
not fair. I enjoyed Little Nicky. I like clearly you did not enjoy this film. I wouldn't put the two in the same camp.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, a movie made for you. I
Yeah,
know,
yeah.
even as the words are dripping from my mouth with such vitriol, like I know that, but this is the stuff that Seijin loves. This is the stuff that Seijin like eats up and laps up and's like, "Yes, sir, I'll have another." So like I get that. Like I want you to have that little Nikki, and I use little Nikki because A, listen to the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe. We just did an episode on little Nikki that people who've not even seen little Nikki have praised us for. I've never seen little Nikki, but it was a
It's
good
a turning
episode.
point. It's a turning point in the show.
Yeah.
I will admit that here. Yeah, but
Yeah.
anyway, sorry, go ahead.
If you've been putting off listening to the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe, the linchpin has been discovered. And it's all uphill from here. Or downhill. Good, no, it's gonna get better, right? So uphill, whatever.
It depends on how you look at
But little
it.
Nicky, like the things that you talk about, like I built that movie, and like it's for me. All the like religion stuff that like they expect you to come in with as baggage, right? Like I feel like that's gonna happen for you with Thunder Force. So maybe do check it out. Maybe it was Krypton's disease that had you distracted for the film. And we'll find out that too. I like this one. We're offering a lot of promises that we're probably going to forget to follow up on next week, but maybe not.
This show never. Oh man. So there was Thunder Force. We got SVU out of the way. What
Is there
else did you
anything that
want to
you
say?
want to talk about? Because I have another thing
No,
that I want to do.
let's continue down this boulevard of broken dreams.
All right. Well, we've now reached the lamppost, where I do want to talk about the Saturday classic that we checked out was Paddy Chayefsky's Network.
Yeah, hell yeah, man.
And that
Mad as
movie,
hell. Yeah, man.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I kind of wanted to call ourselves modern day prophets, prophets exposing the hypocrisy of the world today. But like, that's not what we do on this show. We kind of just celebrate our own philosophy of finding things that you enjoy. We're not Howard Beale-esque characters. And the most important thing about that is when Network was made in 1976 and lost the Best Picture Oscar to Rocky, everything that they were doing was meant as satire of what television could become and the power of media. But, you know, as we often see when we discuss art, people looked at it and instead said, this should be the blueprint for the future of television. So now we live in the universe of Network. In terms
it's almost
of
like Thunder Force got it right, and the sociopaths really are the villains. Yeah, man. I it's funny because you said satire, and I was like, no, a critique. And then I thought, no, not a critique at the time, because we're also talking about in the same era. We also get All the President's Men, right? And
yeah.
like that is what true journalism was. Well, look at us, 40 years old, and looking back on the good old days. But like, yeah, man, the idea that it was never meant to be the rule book.
But the fact that it became like every show that's on Fox News is a Howard Beale-esque character just crowing about modern day prophets, crowing about the hypocrisy of Americans. Like,
yeah,
it's just, you know, and reality television and like with shows like Cops and her whole Faye Dunaway's character's whole thing about like, I want to do a fictionalized series that opens up every week with real footage of these like homegrown terrorism groups committing their crimes. And then we spin the narrative dramatized out of how they got to that point. And it's just like, oh my God, like it gives you the creeping horrors that it was such a prophetic thing, but it's not that it was prophetic. It's not like Paddy Chayefsky wrote Network and thought, this is where TV's going to go. It's that the network saw Network and said, this would probably work. Let's try
we can do
it.
This. Yeah.
Why
yeah.
aren't we All doing right. this? And that now that's the world we live in. It's so, like, it's so weird. But, like, that's the important distinction, is understanding that, like, it's not that Network was prophetic. It's not that it predicted so much of how the world is. It's the fact that by existing, it mapped out how television could become that. And it's so strange to, like, have to remind yourself that while you're watching it.
Yeah,
it's like, God. It's not chicken and the egg. It's not which came first. It is, he gave them the blueprint to turn television into this. And they took to it with aplomb. Aplomb. Yeah, aplomb. I like aplomb. I don't like it when it dries out and becomes a prune. Is that what happens?
Oh, man. Oh, God, Dev.
Which brings us to the video game section of this week's Say Report. And the latest on display in the Battle Royale, but just classic video games world. There has to be a better name for this genre. Retro Royale. That's what we're going to call it. Yeah. Because it's basically who can play this game the best. And you've seen Tetris 99, I have cheered Super Mario 35, and now the successor to Super Mario 35 is upon us, and it's not WarioWare 99 like I had so deeply hoped, and that's weirdly getting traction on the internet, I've seen a lot of people talking about that, but Pac-Man 99. And if Buckner and Garcia knew that we'd all get Pac-Man fever in 2021, I bet they would have done more with that song.
And probably maintain the rights to it that I'm sure that they sold years ago for cocaine
to
and
Namco.
Boats.
They just sold it to Namco for like, yeah, well, we get a Pac-Man machine? Yeah, let's do it. That's why we wrote the song.
Oh man. Originally they were gonna call it Puckman. There's
But they thought
yeah,
it'd be
man,
too
so
easy to vandalize.
so Pac-Man 99, I was really under the impression it followed more in the vein of a Tetris 99. It's not like Super Mario 35 that had a lot of weird caveats to it, like a la it's not gonna exist in 6 months, right? Like, or is it gonna be pulled?
So it's not going to be pulled. In fact, like, it's pretty easy to see that this one is sticking around in the fact that there's already DLC for it. There are people that were like asking for DLC for Super Mario 35, and that fell on deaf ears. But Pac-Man 99 burst from the womb with a deluxe edition DLC already attached to it that adds all of those things that Tetris 99 adds, like a single player mode or private lobbies and all sorts of things like that, of that nature. Pac-Man 99 comes out, and if you are a Nintendo Switch Online subscriber, you have access to the game. You can play the game online with other people. But then to unlock all the other modes, it is $15, $14.99. And then there are themes that you can unlock that are other Namco games. So, like, instead of Pac-Man, it can be the Dig Dug guy running around and he's hunting down the dinosaurs and the guys with the goggles from Dig Dug.
Cute.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think that that's a fun way to kind of celebrate the Namco history.
And there are, I want to say, 15 of those. Yeah, there's 15 of those. And each one of those themes is $2. So if you were to get all of them, it'd be $30 for that, $45 for the unlock, or you can get the deluxe edition, which is $30, and it unlocks all of that for you. And the fact that it has that component to it right there says we're sticking around. This is not going to be like Mario 35, where we have an end date. We want Pac-Man 99 to be the next Tetris 99. That is our goal.
Honestly, I mean, I personally am much more interested in a Pac-Man continuous like battle royale style than I ever was in Tetris. Tetris, at some point, the AI would beat my ass, never mind other people playing it, but like I've had some serious fun getting pretty deep into some Pac-Man. So this is making me a little bit more hopeful to jump in and play it. You had asked beforehand if I'd even bothered to look at it, and my experiences with other battle royale, retro royale games had kind of soured me to it. The only benefit this had going for it was that Pac-Man is kind of like a like it's the right nostalgic string to pull with me. But I'm more interested in it knowing that maybe I can give it some time so that I can let the sting of Mario 35 being kind of a bummer to me like wear off before I jump into this one.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be around for a while, and you don't need. I have not bought that deluxe edition, and I don't honestly see myself doing it. Where, like, Tetris 99, I considered it because I've never been good enough at Tetris 99 to win a match of Tetris 99. And then Super Mario 35 came along, and, I was very good at that one. I was able to get wins. I think my win percentage is like 34%, which really sticks in my craw that I couldn't have had a 35% win percentage on Super Mario 35, because now it's gone forever, Seijin.
Yeah. Maybe you can fudge it. Maybe it was like 34.5
It's
and you kind of
34
got
and
the bounce
change.
up.
But I'm too honest to the fact that I'm going to say that I have a 34% win percentage on that game. So then, like, I was excited to try Pac-Man 99. And really, what it does have going for it is that continuous gapless play of Pac-Man. The fact that there's no stopping. Because the thing that makes me tired of playing Pac-Man is when you eat all the pellets on the board and then you have to wait for it to load up the next board. I know that might sound ridiculous, but like, it does. It sort of kills the buzz of the fact that you're playing Pac-Man.
That's why Ms. Pac-Man introduced stories, like
I
the
mean,
idea that you got little vignettes between them.
there are, yeah, it is Ms. Pac-Man that has that first. I actually think there are tiny vignettes in Pac-Man 2, but it doesn't have like the they meet storyline. It's just like Pac-Man chasing the ghosts, and then let or like the ghost chasing Pac-Man and then a giant Pac-Man coming,
Yeah,
like
like a Scooby-Doo style, like back and forth.
like there are cutscenes, because I'm fairly certain it's Pac-Man where the ghost gets caught on a nail and reveals that they're humans in sheets, because you have a human leg once the ghost covering is ripped, which like that's just terrifying to me on like a level that I'm not comfortable with.
But that means that Puckman has eaten them all.
Yeah, once he eats a power pellet, he can't just eat humans in sheets,
No,
Seijin.
first he has to go after the fucking bath salts, and then he starts, and then he goes after the
It's
humans.
nuts. It's just crazy. It's just it's insane stuff. But yeah, playing it, and so the way Pac-Man 99 works is you're given the basic Pac-Man board, and you eat the dots, and if you eat all of the dots, you get a speed up. The only way to advance to the next round and to replenish the pellets on the board is to eat the fruit in the center that in regular Pac-Man is just a bonus.
And usually disappears.
Yeah, so that shows up once you've eaten roughly 75% of the pellets that are on the board, and then you collect it and it resets and speed goes up, the time that ghosts are able to be eaten goes down, and all the other shifts of the rounds of Pac-Man happen when you eat that fruit. So, and at the same time, you're playing against 99 other people who can send jammers to you. And there are yellow jammers, and they look like Pac-Man, but they're hollow. That's just the outline of Pac-Man. And those slow you down. And then there are red jammers, and those will kill you. And the yellow jammers go away when you collect a power pellet, a super power pellet, the ones that give him the ability to eat ghosts. Those eliminate all yellow jammers on the board, and the only way to stop to destroy red jammers is to eat that fruit. So as the game increases in speed and like fast and furiousness, it becomes less about clearing all the pellets to get that speed bonus and more about eating enough pellets to destroy those red jammers by making the fruit appearing and eating it. Because those red jammers, they're the worst part about Pac-Man 99. Because.
I'm extremely excited in this idea because like one of my favorite things that has come out of arcade like history in the last like 20 years is Pac-Man Royale, Pac-Man Battle Royale. The Dave and Buster's I believe Dave and Buster's exclusive four-person Pac-Man game that you can sit down and play with three of your friends. And like a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, not necessarily the jammers part, but like being able to like send like more shit to each other's screens to like fuck with other people and getting boosts and stuff by making sure you're the first one to finish pellets and stuff. That all comes from the Battle Royale game, and I love that. Especially because like nothing beats like going into a Dave and Buster's to a giant like 20-foot screen with Pac-Man on it and four Pac-Men running around on it, right?
Yeah, the big
So
thing is
yeah.
that from that, taking directly from that, there are the sleeping ghosts that are in the two main highways. And when you go over those, they create ghost trains with the nearest ghost. And once a ghost train is started, that's where all sleeping ghosts go. So, like, it's also about making these huge snake-like ghost creatures and being able to control them as well.
And then getting a power pellet and
And
just going to fucking
eating
town.
them, and the more that you eat, the more jammers you send to your enemies or whoever you're targeting, and it's just a way to last until it's over. And
Cool.
I didn't think I was gonna win any, but I've won four. My ratio is awful on this game. Like, I understand that. A lot of top 10 finishes, but I've only got the four number one finishes. And every time I get it, it's just like I'm in the Pac-Man zone where like it's just all about that right amount of grease on the joystick. And becoming one with the machine. And then it stops, and I'm like, what the hell happened? And it's like, you won, idiot. And I'm like, oh, thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
Red.
But
Nice.
yeah, it doesn't heal me from losing Super Mario 35, but a match of Pac-Man 99 doesn't last like 14 minutes. They're quick in and out things. So, in the time that I would do a Super Mario 35, I can knock out like four or five Pac-Man 99s. And I'm talking to like first place or second place finish. So, It reveals a lot of the weaknesses of Super Mario 35 and explains why it had that shelf life, that eventual expiration date, because that game would at some point have diminishing returns in terms of players and everything, unless they were willing to invest in DLC. So.
Which, God, Nintendo never would have been. Yeah, so is it Namco that's behind this, or is it
I feel
like
like it has to be Namco who's behind it in some way, shape, or form, because the themes that you can get, like, it goes deep into the Namco library. Like, Robot Man, I can't, like, Ultra Robot is one of the themes.
where does Midway fall in with Namco? Do they ever cross paths? Like, could you get like Space Invaders and things like that, or is that
Probably not. You do have, like, you have Galaga, right? So you
okay.
can be the Galaga ship flying around, and the
Nice.
ghosts look like the bugs that you're fighting in that. It's Bandai Namco, so it's from a lot of those. I'm trying to think. Dragon Spirit is what it was released as in America, but I don't think that's the name of it in like the grand world or even in the arcade. But Dragon Spirit is a game that is near and dear to me. It's like a shmup type of game, shmup.
Okay. Yeah.
And that is one of the themes, and like that's the one that I almost want to spend money on, because it turns Pac-Man into the dragon from Dragon Spirit, and the
Nice.
four ghosts become the major flying enemies from the game, like the Firebird and the Pterodactyl, because you're traveling through time in Dragon Spirit as well. You're collecting dragon spirits through time in order to take down a god. That's a great game, Dragon Spirit, that I need to finish someday. That's a promise for another day, though. Don't let
That's
me
a
play
that, I
Life
mean,
Force.
I love that this is like that this is kind of their way of going about it, because like I can just imagine how freaking crazy eventually it could be once people get to a point where like the ones that are playing it are the ones that spend money on it, right? And so you'd just be looking at a board of Pac-Man 99 and just see all of this crazy shit going on that doesn't have anything to do with Pac-Man.
Yeah. I mean, it is closer to Tetris, where you all exist on your own board and the only interaction is the jammers. But
Right.
like the 99 or Super Mario 35, you can see what's going on the other screens. So it could become that very cool, like, collage of
Of
Namco
Namco nonsense.
history. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's.
I like all of this, and I applaud this. I don't know why Superman 35 kind of rubbed me
Superman
such
35.
Superman, yeah, sorry, Mario Man 35, Super Mario 35 rubbed me such the wrong way when even when they first announced it. I think it was literally because they did announce it with that end date, and it was very much like what is the point here? Like what's the hook? You know that old saying, like if you can't see what's for sale, then the answer is you. Like Superman 30, Superman, God, Super Mario 35 felt like that. Like, right? Like, where I was like, okay, clearly they're trying to get something out of me, but what are they trying to get out of me? I just don't trust it. Whereas like Pac-Man comes out wearing its shit on its sleeve, where it's just like, yeah, you can play the game, or for $30 you could do all of this, and it's just like, okay, I get you.
Right. What it honestly feels like is that Super Mario 35 was a stopgap to Pac-Man 99. Like, in the grossest terms possible. Like,
Yeah,
and
but this isn't a Nintendo product, right? So what does Nintendo gain by putting a stopgap in place?
so what Nintendo gains by putting a stopgap in place? And here it is. Here, I'm putting on the tinfoil hat. Seijin already has his on because
Always
he's
do.
got a purple bald spot right now. He led with that. you baking a potato up there? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. What they gain probably is that Pac-Man 99 is ready to go. Pac-Man 99 is ready to go, and so is Super Mario 35. But if we release both of them at the same time, they will cannibalize each other, right? But Pac-Man 99, further along the development path for all the other add-ons, right? How long do you think it would take you to finish all the add-on content for this game to release it as a full package that has, say, a $30 upgrade that you can pay for? Let 6 months. It'll take us 6 months to do that. All right. So Super Mario 35, it works. It works right now. We will release it for that 6 month period. We will make people like it. We will make people fall in love with it. We will then take it away from them. And we will devote all, and you can devote the development to Pac-Man 99, which we will then release as an exclusive for our Nintendo Switch Online. And, like, that sells subscriptions to the Nintendo Switch Online service, right? Like, it's not just that I am getting the ability to play Splatoon with my friends, but I also get some free games, right? And for a certain subsection of the Nintendo fan base, getting these reimaginations of the old games is a bigger draw than for the people who just want to play online to play their games with friends, to play their Splatoon 2 with people. So it brings in the whole other subset who would be like, I don't really need Nintendo Online. Getting a free game with it is a big deal for that, right?
Yeah, for sure. It feels like Nintendo is once again just really behind the ball on doing this online service stuff, because the idea of giving out free games with your online service is not new, and we are getting much better games with other services than we are in this case.
But the ones that we're getting from Nintendo are specially designed for Nintendo and only on Nintendo. So say Nintendo pays for some sort of, you know, exclusivity deal. Because I think it would be foolish to keep Pac-Man 99 for Namco to keep it only tied to Nintendo Switch. This is one that I think they would want to take across all platforms if they can. But Nintendo pays for the exclusivity, and then they have Pac-Man 99 drawing sales of the Nintendo Switch Online service so that they can develop Super Mario 35 perhaps into a Super Mario 99 style thing, or develop DLC for it, or develop their next Nintendo exclusive Retro Royale game to release on their system. And so they have Pac-Man 99 drawing sales, getting people coming, keeping people involved, and then either they bring back Super Mario 35 with the DLC that people were demanding, and it's available forever now, and people are happy because the thing that was taken away from us has been returned to us, right? And we've seen that is a terrifyingly effective marketing strategy to especially take something away and then bring it back.
Especially for Nintendo. The whole idea that, you can't play this game anymore because we don't support that system. And then, we'll do an HD resed up version for you for another $60. And people throw it down. Yeah. And I mean, like, it's not a judgment one way or the other, because I am one of the first people usually to throw that second $60 down. But it definitely is something we have seen that Nintendo is really buying into.
Right. So they keep people coming. They do that. Or once Pac-Man 99, and if it is like a 6-month cycle, right? And I think that they learned that with Tetris 99, because people were into Tetris 99, and then 6 months later, that's when they released all the DLC for it. Mm-hmm. That's when you could have the single player mode and all that other stuff. So they've noticed that it's a 6-month cycle. So 6 months from now, October of 2021, we'll probably get another Retro Royale style game, and it'll either be the return of Super Mario 35 with all this other stuff that you can dump money into, because they don't want to do it while that game is out there, because people will still be playing that game. They won't try the new game. Or we see a new Retro Royale to draw people to subscribing to Nintendo Switch Online.
Super Mario 35. And then for 6 months after that, we will be in 2022. And that's when it'll happen. Sonic 31.
Or something similar. But I feel like that's how it's going. I think that that's what they're doing. They're using these 99, these Retro Royale games, as a way to keep interest and keep people subscribing to the service when they wouldn't be, right?
Yeah,
and that's
it. I'm only half joking about the idea of Sonic the Hedgehog 31, because also they could line it up with the release of the sequel for the movie, right? And it becomes like a marketing thing, and they love boasting about how they have Sonic now for all of their shit. So if they can keep up the concept of the 6-month cycle, right? Like, let's buy into this idea that it is something that they meant to do, which I don't necessarily believe, but I'm willing to go with for right now. And if they're willing to do that and keep up with it and keep kind of putting these Retro Royales out every 6 months with a different new kind of chutzpah behind them, right? Tying it into things like a movie coming out, or like a release of a new game, like that kind of that kind of synergy is something that we've never seen from Nintendo before and would be marvelous to see them starting to do.
I mean, honestly, if we're talking perfect world, all rumors, what they actually release in October is the next iteration of the Switch. Whether it's the Super Nintendo Switch, the Switch Pro, or something like that, it's not another Retro Royale that we see in
Or
October of this year. It is a new
along
system.
with a new system, along with the return of Super Mario 35. Can you imagine that? Like, if they were like, new system, you automatically get online if you buy into one of these like premier edition versions of it, which means you also automatically get Super Mario 35, The Return of the King, right? Like they could package that all together pretty beautifully.
And you know what? Nintendo, steal all of these ideas because I'm fine with you taking the ideas. So if these weren't the ideas, and the intern that you have listening to podcasts for ideas to take comes across this one, I'm giving it to you. Make it so that Super Mario 35 is only playable on the new system.
Oh, requires whatever space memory saving bullshit chip you
Yeah.
put into it or
Like
some
you go
nonsense.
up to 99 so that it becomes Super Mario 99, but the only way that we can handle it is on the new system.
This baby right here can only fit 99 Mario's in it. All
You
right.
won't believe how many Marios can fit inside of the Super Nintendo Switch.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I mean, like, these are all gross marketing schema, but, like, honestly, what there are people who loved Super Mario 35, right? There are people, like, my Twitter was full of people who shared the seed once service cut off, like, who were just playing it and then it cut off for everybody on April 2nd, which still bums me out because I wish I could have been there, but you told me it was going to end on April 1st. I'm mad at you, Nintendo, and I'm still giving you ideas.
But anybody out there that still thinks that Nintendo doesn't play the marketing game is out of their minds. I mean, like, the thing that we have always loved about Nintendo is not that they were not like every other business. Of course they are. They're just like every other business. It's that they were able to always kind of package that in a very fun, family-friendly way.
Yeah, and that's. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if the return of Super Mario 35 in some iteration that has themes, or it's also Super Mario Brothers 2 35, like, or Super Mario Brothers 3. Like, I could see that happening, but I could also see them tying it to the rumored next level Switch as a way to drive sales. Of course, all that matters. Like, they don't want to have a PlayStation 5, Xbox Series situation on their hands. The thing that is holding up those right now, and honestly, that could be the other thing that Pac-Man 99 is a band-aid for, is the fact that there are huge silicone shortages in our world right now, and they couldn't produce new systems to release on the 4-year anniversary of the Nintendo Switch. So they released Pac-Man 99 to placate people, hoping that in 6 months from now they can do that. And if they
They can
can't
actually
do
get
it
the
in 6
systems out
months
there.
from now, I'm sure they'll have some other placation system to bring it off to March of next year. And I feel awful saying this, I honestly do, but at the same time, it kind of fits with how Nintendo has been working for the last 4 years with the Switch.
Yeah, no. I mean, they've look, like I said, anybody out there that has fooled themselves into thinking that Nintendo don't play the game has not been paying attention. Like this is very interesting, and whether or not it's good or not, business is happening, right? Like they are businessmen doing business. And they've always done it, and they've always survived. So like, why would they stop?
Indeed. All right. Well, I've icked myself out enough with corporate doublespeak. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about before we send this one off?
No, I'm surprised we got through all of that and didn't once talk about Zelda being a possibility, but yeah, like no, man, I think I'm good.
I'm stopping talking about the 35th anniversary of Zelda, which we are currently in, for hope that sorry, hoping that by not talking about it, that's what's going to finally make an announcement happen.
Yeah, right.
Because I think that every time someone says, "Hey, Nintendo, it's Zelda's 35th anniversary," I mean, as you very poignantly said, that's not a thing. We don't celebrate the 35th anniversary of things. And the Pokemon display that happened earlier this year, talking about the Shining Pearl and the Dazzling Diamond Pokemon games, and the Arceus game that looks like a mix between Breath of the Wild and Pokemon. This is the year of Pokemon. And that makes sense because it's more of an important anniversary for Pokemon than it is the 35th anniversary of Zelda.
Oh man, yeah.
And I love Zelda. I'm the first person in line to talk about it. So yeah, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about, Siege?
No,
Anything
you
else
good.
to add? I picked up Golf Story, so I'm going to be doing Golf Story. I'll have more to talk about. I just started it today. I'm kind of a fan so far. I didn't think I'd like a golf game as much as I do, but we'll see as it goes forward. And also, something else that will definitely be talked about next week, I bought a custom case to build a fight stick.
Oh man.
So that is arriving tomorrow, and all the internals should be arriving by the end of the week. So I'll probably have some things to share about
Yeah.
Devin's adventures in constructing an arcade stick.
I am very curious, and I'm also very curious to hear what you're going to play with it, but we'll get there. We'll
Well,
get
yeah,
there.
I mean, that's the thing. Seijin, start thinking of a list, because I have a couple of games. Super Nintendo and NES are definitely on the table,
Okay.
because I've bought converters that will make it compatible with both of those systems.
I mean, how far along can we go here? Like, doesn't Xbox have some of the Street Fighters, like latest Street Fighters up on its Game Pass and stuff like
I'm
that?
pretty sure, but I've specifically, the board that I bought for it is specifically a retro board, so it
Okay,
knows how
okay.
to communicate with all of the older systems, because
Ooh,
that's
this is gonna
more
be
what
very
I'm
cool.
interested in.
Yeah, for
But
sure.
I
No, this will be
also,
really.
it also comes with the way to attach USB, so like that kind of opens up Steam as a possibility.
Cool. Good to
Yeah,
know.
so I mean, if there's something you want me to check out, you can get to me on Twitter at Devin D. Decker.
And if you want to hit me up and talk to me a little bit more about other forms of Law and Order I should be watching, you can find me at Siege versus the World.
All right, so at this point, let's send it down under. Will, bring us home.
Thank you for listening to the Say Report with your host Devin Decker and Sieben Serwick. Please follow the guys on Twitter and Facebook by searching for The Say Report, and you can always subscribe on your podcast channel so this is delivered straight to you and you can enjoy it every week. With apologies to your mother, we'll see you next time.